we do in school, and now through that high school into college years, and now you're done with that. And all of a sudden, you have celebrated your 25th wedding anniversary. And you begin to think to yourself, well, maybe that number 50 is not all that elusive after all. However, divorce is increasing among those who are older. The incidence of divorce in those over 50 have doubled, and 1 in 4 divorces are from people 50 and older. And you wonder about that, and you think about that, that after a couple of decades and after all of the challenges and the things that you go through, wouldn't that be something that, you know, finally you've kind of come to grips with, that you've figured out, that you have it kind of set, and that you can just kind of turn that on to automatic pilot, and that you'll just get there. But if you look at the statistics, that's not happening. And there is an increase in problems with those that are a little bit older. In that older age group, surveys suggest that extramarital affairs occur in a relatively small number of couples. That is generally not the problem. How can things work for so long, so well, and then all of a sudden, it's not working so well? How can we be doing so good, and then now, all of a sudden, like that, things just change? Well, I'd suggest to you that it's not just like that. That it's not all of a sudden, and that most of the time it's a gradual decline that has been taking place for a pretty good long period of time. That the marriage gradually loses energy and finds itself in decline and a stalemate and is rather flat. People have drifted apart, they say. Or they say, well, we're not the same people that we used to be. That they're different people now, but really a lot of times that's just synonymous with the fact that they've not invested in that relationship. That they have not nurtured that relationship. They have not spent the time necessary to grow that relationship and keep the wheels turning as they should. Michelle Weiner Davis, a well-known marriage counselor, says this: the number one thing that causes the breakdown of marriages is the same thing that causes infidelity. Couples aren't prioritizing their marriage. People spend time on their careers, kids, community affairs, hobbies, sports, but they take their spouses for granted. It just doesn't work that way. I must consciously make an effort, do things to enhance it, take the time. Our culture is one that emphasizes personal fulfillment. And because of our culture and because of that kind of idea, if I am not being fulfilled, or perhaps I am not getting out of that relationship what I think that I should, eventually in that environment, it is likely that someone will say, well, this is just not working for me. And that's a lot of times what we see. But folks, God created this institution to be stable and good and was never intended to be ineffectual and stale. This morning I want to talk for just a little bit about marriage. I want to deal with a specific target group of people, and that is married people. But for the next few months, I kind of want to target different groups from different times. I want to talk about single folks. I want to talk about parents. I want to talk about grandparents. I want to kind of hit some of those different groups. And so this morning I want for us to turn our attention to marriage. And I am particularly this morning thinking about not those newlyweds, or not maybe even those that are in their older years, although I think some of the things we talk about never, ever go away, and they're needed at all times. But I'm kind of talking about that sweet spot of folks that have been married for a little while. And maybe kind of in between that middle group of people that are married, people like me. But I hope that all of us will pay attention to the things that are said, because we may be in a position to help somebody, even if we're a single person, to help somebody that's in that situation. Or maybe we will be married, and we need to listen to those kinds of things. What can we do to make certain that we can make our marriage all that it can be? Let me tell you, it's not about an increase in intimacy or romance or that kind of thing, you know, the fireworks.
That's just kind of the icing on the cake.
But if the cake is bad, you can put all the icing you want to on it. If the cake is rotten, that's not going to make a whole lot of difference. And so we want to get down to kind of the nuts and bolts of that a little bit for a few minutes this morning. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, we have the instruction here given to husbands that they dwell with their wives with understanding. Likewise, dwell with them with understanding. We'll get to that passage here in just a little bit. But the first thing I want to mention to you is that we need to be understanding. And this is from both standpoints because it says likewise there. And we'll talk about that again in a few minutes as well. Dwell with them with understanding, but understand what love looks like. There was a teenager some time ago, a few years ago, that made a statement that really garnered a lot of attention. They said this, "My love life will never be satisfactory until someone runs through an airport to stop me from getting on a flight." Now that's kind of that thing. If they do that, well, then they've done everything that I need to. That's the pinnacle of what someone could do. I don't know what movie that comes from, but maybe I think we've probably all seen that movie of that happens. And so here is someone that feels like that's just really the relationship that they need to have or that they have to have. But if we set the bar hopelessly high, how will we ever be satisfied? One lady responded in a little piece that she wrote, and the piece was called, "He's Never Run Through an Airport for Me." And she said this, kind of a little excerpt in that, "I threw up so hard and fast and often one night in a farmhouse in Pennsylvania that I couldn't stand come morning. He moved over and out and gave me the bed. He went out for crackers and soda and mind-numbing games to keep the three kids occupied and away from Mom. I looked in the mirror and there was nothing romantic looking back at me, but around the wrinkles in my eyes, the parched white cheeks, there was the deep romance of being loved beyond how I looked. He's never run through an airport for me. He's gone out for milk at 10 p.m. He's held our children through bouts of stomach viruses and told me there is nothing about his kids that disgusts him. He's carried us on his shoulders when we were too tired or too sad or too done to keep doing the everyday ins and outs that make up a life. He's unloaded 100 loads of laundry and put the dishes away. He lays down his life, and it looks like so many ordinary moments stitched together into the testimony of a good man who comes home to his family in the old minivan, the one with the broken air conditioning. He's never run through an airport for me. He runs on snatched sleep and kids tucked into his shoulder on both sides of the bed. He is patient and kind. He always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres, and we come running to him. When the battered white minivan pulls into the driveway, his children trip over themselves, their abandoned Crocs in the pull bag, to be the first to open the door and spill out their day into the hands of the man who can catch them." What are our expectations about marriage? What is it that we think of? Often in our culture, we see that which generates our expectations into what a marriage ought to be. You know, this the perfect house and the perfect woman who always looks good, even in the morning. And she's everything, loves everything outdoors. And then this guy who's sensitive and chiseled and, you know, just everything that he could be is romantic and loves to go shopping rather than watch football, and he loves cats. You know, what more could you ask for? I don't know that I'll ever get there, but here's the picture. And the expectation, if you look at social media and you see all these perfect things, and this is what I have to live up to. Well, we need to think about our expectations. I must be able to properly assess and identify love and set my expectations. Over in the Old Testament, in the book of Zechariah and chapter 4, the people of God come back after captivity and the temple of Solomon has been replaced with another temple. And they look at that temple and it wasn't what they expected. And God says something there to them as He speaks to them in that Old Testament book of Zechariah in chapter 4 and verse 10 that they needed to think about, I think, very deeply. In chapter 4, and that doesn't look right. Wrote down the wrong passage there. And my memory is not as good as Jim's that I can call it back that quickly. The passage I'm looking for says, "Who has despised the day of small things?" I don't think that passage says that. It's all of those things that we understand what God is doing. And that we manage our expectations and we realize that if we don't do that, we will be forever disappointed. God rebukes that attitude. And perhaps we don't recognize love when He drives up in that beat up pickup and that thing is just kind of rattling and the air conditioning doesn't work. Well, that's love. It's not that Hollywood version, although every once in a while the Hollywood version maybe comes true in real life, but that's not the norm. Love doesn't always look like a sprint through an airport to save somebody from getting on a plane. Sometimes it's a frazzled mom who stayed up all night or a grass clippings covered sweaty dad. And we need to understand that. We need to get that. And don't expect perfection. You will have your arguments. And love doesn't mean there's constant agreement, but it does work through. And you begin to learn some things about one another and how to handle those things. I have learned that Sheila has the last word in every argument. Because if I say anything else, that's the start of a new argument. Can I give you that advice? But that's just kind of, we need to understand how life works and what love is. Sometimes it's not rose-colored pink. It's dirty, brown-colored black. Because we got to get in. We got to dig deep. And that's not easy sometimes. I need to understand what love looks like. And I also need to be understanding of my role. Look at Ephesians chapter 5 with me, if you will. Society at large is not a very big fan of this passage in Ephesians chapter 5. In Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 22, as to what Paul says here, "But many marriages fail for the sake of not implementing what it is that Paul directs us to right here in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22. He says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church, and He is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her, that He might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that He might present her to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." Many marriages fail for the sake of not implementing this, and there is no understanding in our world, it seems, as to role, as to order, as to approach and structure. There is no plan. And so there is in that a lot of pushback and a lot of pull. And a lot of tug of war and a lot of little battles that happen all the time. And maybe sometimes they're masked by the fact that we're so busy. So many activities and so many things going on. But there really is underneath all of that, this tension and finally, exasperation. But what God gives us here in Ephesians 5 is a plan for marriage that works. It works. When we get into those places, when we understand this is what God delivered, and we get into those places and we honor that, it works. And the role of sacrificial leadership, which is carried out in a loving wife that will pursue him in that leadership. And no matter who or what society tries to offer some other solution, it will never equal the divine plan that's set up in Ephesians chapter 5. Every organization has to have structure and roles and fulfillment of those roles in order to be successful. And sometimes there are decisions that have to be made, and in a party of two, how are we going to deal with that? There's not always that agreement. How will we proceed? C.S. Lewis said something about that in Mere Christianity. He said, they cannot decide by a majority vote, for in a council of two there can be no majority. Surely only one of or other of two things can happen. Either they must separate and go their own ways, or else one or other of them must have a casting vote. If marriage is permanent, one or other party must, in the last resort, have the power of deciding the family policy. You cannot have a permanent association without a constitution. Ephesians 5, you see, is the constitution. And it's not written by men. It's not like our constitution, which maybe, you know, when we look at that, we might find some flaw. We might find something that's not quite right. But God wrote this constitution. And when that is not respected, there will be resentment and there will be failure in that. We have to respect that. Christ sacrificed everything for the sake of the church. That's the kind of leadership, men, that is offered. That's the ultimate example of what we are to do. But yet sometimes we see us being selfish and taking over in a way that Christ never showed us. We've got to get into our role. And then women to respect and support him in that love, to love him. If the marriage is struggling and we are bumping heads, oftentimes it's just because we're not respecting that. So if we have knots on our heads, we need to get that figured out and please the Lord. He is the potter and we are the clay, and we need to understand that directional approach to our relationships. There's a saying that's, I think, applicable when it comes to this, and that saying is, if you don't know what port you are sailing to, no wind is a good wind. We have to have that direction. We have to have that understanding and a plan. And the port of call for us is heaven. And that's where we're going. And that man is to lead toward there. And that woman, in respecting that desire, is going to just love to be there with him as he goes in that direction. I've got to understand my role. And I've got to get into that role where there is servant leadership, direction, and coordinate labor in the direction of heaven. Understanding. 1 Peter chapter 3. Let's turn over there quickly. 1 Peter chapter 3. And to remember that marriage was not created by God so that we might have our every want met. That was not the nature of that. And so I need to be understanding as well of my need to serve. There's a lot of service that goes on in the marriage relationship. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and beginning in verse 5, he says, for in this manner in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." I want you to notice that word there, likewise. Likewise indicates reciprocation. We're doing this likewise, together. We're both doing this. This isn't a one-sided thing. This is not unilateral. This is something we are doing. She's doing. He's doing. And when we are doing, then that marriage will be what God would have it to be. When we are dating, it is all about what the other person wants, isn't it? Usually. It's about what movies she likes to see. How many cheesy movies have I seen because I thought that's what she would like. And I went there only to find out that she actually liked the same movies that I do. That she likes the other kind, which was great. But to go where she wants to eat, and then for him to think about what he likes and what dress he likes and how he wants me to look and those kinds of things, only for us to get married and we just kind of lose that. We just kind of forget about that. And don't have that same kind of concern, and the complaints increase about what we're each one not doing right. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the passage that Glenn read for us, in verse 5 of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it says, "Love does not seek its own." Love does not seek its own. Half of our troubles are because we are wanting our way. And the other half of our troubles are because we're trying to get it. If we could just understand that love does not seek its own, it's not about me, and that I am serving in this relationship. It's like Jesus in John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, this great example that he gives us, where everybody is at the table and they are wondering about themselves and they're wondering about me, and he gets up from that table and girds himself with a towel and he serves them. And he washes their feet. And he humbles himself in such a marvelous way in John chapter 13 and verse 3 beginning. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And then he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this." Service. Servant leadership. Getting down and serving in the way that we can, instead of getting off of my high horse and getting down and serving. And Jesus exemplifies it. Of all people to do such a thing. And we need that kind of motivation. We need it here. We need it. We need it in this body. That's what he was exemplifying there. That in our brother-sister relationship, brother-brother relationship, sister-sister relationship, that's what we do. He says, "You don't understand this now, but this is what I want you to do later for one another. You serve one another." And I guess the question for us is, whose feet have I washed in this local group of people? Whose feet have I washed? And then, once we answer that question, you know, how can we be practicing those things in this body only to leave and go into our homes, and then all of a sudden it's all about me? Our homes are a place where we really exemplify the gospel. How inconsistent would it be to then be all about being served in that relationship? There was a little example written by someone, illustration called the marriage box. It said this: Most people get married believing a myth that marriage is a beautiful box of all things that they have longed for. Companionship, intimacy, friendship, etc. The truth is that marriage at the start is an empty box. You must put something in before you can take anything out. There is no love in marriage. Love is in people. And people put love in marriage. There is no romance in marriage. You have to infuse it into your marriage. A couple must learn the art, the form, and form the habit of giving, loving, serving, praising, of keeping the box full. If you take out more than you put in, the box will be empty. And I think that's a good question for us to ask. What am I putting in? Am I constantly putting in? Am I constantly filling that up with good deeds and love and praise and all those good things in marriage, serving my mate? Or am I just constantly taking from them? May God help us to be as we should in that relationship. It takes time. It takes commitment. It takes determination to finish. And thankfully, God has been patient with me. How can I not be with someone else? And how can I not return that to someone else? We need to count our blessings. I heard someone kind of make a parallel of that song as concerns marriage. And they changed the words of that song. Well, it's a well-known song for us, but I like what they did with the words of that song. When upon life's billows your marriage is tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking your marriage is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done in your marriage. Is your marriage burdened with a load of care? Does it seem great, a heavy burden to bear? Count your many blessings. Every doubt will fly, and you will be singing as the days go by. When you look at other marriages with romantic stories untold, remember in your home there is wealth untold. Count your many blessings, the love you know and couldn't buy, a loving home now and your home on high. So in all the conflict, whether great or small, do not be discouraged in your marriage. God is over all. Count your many blessings. Angels will attend, help and comfort give you till your journey's end. If we are not careful in this life and we despise the small things, the things that are real, the things that are genuine, Paul says in all those things, in everything give thanks, we will miss what we can have in that relationship. But we need to be warned. If we do not continue to build that, and we put it on cruise control, and we do not nurture that, and we do not infuse into that what we ought, it will go flat. We must pray, we must act, we must do, so that our marriages will be what God intends them to be, what He created, what He wanted for them to be. Back in Genesis chapter 2, when He started this whole thing, this wonderful relationship called marriage. I'm going to talk about in a few weeks the idea that marriage, I think, is the perfect place to display the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because there are so many occasions when we are called upon to exemplify what the gospel has changed in us. And the way that we deal things, the way that we approach things, the way that we talk about things, our language, our love, all of that in that relationship is exemplified in such a wonderful, practical way. So this morning, likewise, dwell with them in understanding. Thank you for listening this morning. I appreciate very much the attention that you've given to this message. It's an important message. May God help us to grow our marriages, to be strong in that relationship, to encourage each other in that relationship, because we need it. We need that every day. May God help us to be in our lives, in every area of our lives, what He would have us to be. Jesus Christ died on a cross, as Jim so well said, so that we might have the blessings that are mentioned in Ephesians chapter 1. He sacrificed everything that he did for the church so that in that relationship it could be everything that he wanted it to be. And he has nurtured it and he has given it everything that he could possibly give it. If we're outside of that and we're not enjoying that relationship, what a tragic thing that we have not taken advantage of all that he sacrificed in order to provide for. We need to take advantage of that. If someone's here this morning, they need to be obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ. We'd encourage you to come while we stand.